Snoop Dogg. Such a shot. You are listening to the Brooklyn Culture Jam. I'm your host, Dan Kinch. Tonight, we will be talking to musician Chris Lowe. We'll be talking to him about working with a man known as the mayor of McDougal Street. He's got some great songs that he'd like to share with us, and this has been an interview I've wanted to do for a long time. So stay tuned. And welcome, and if everything's working right, Chris should be there, right? Are you there? Okay, let's try this. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Cool, welcome. So, I don't know that people are acquainted with your work. I know of you as being somebody who studied with Dave Van Ronk, who we'll be talking about a little bit. You're a guitarist, a singer, a songwriter. You have been an actor in your current and previous life.
Yep.
And it sounds like you're wrestling with a cat.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay. So, let's...
Not right now.
Okay, well, that's awfully nice of you. So, let's talk about where you are at the moment. Been somebody who studied with one of the legends of the village, a man named Dave Van Ronk. Talk to me about that journey a little bit.
Sure. Back in the late 80s, I was playing at an open mic and down at the place called the Speakeasy on McDougal Street. And I heard a guy named John Campbell play guitar. And I noticed that he was playing bass lines with his thumb of his right hand and lead lines with the fingers of his right hand. And all of a sudden, the thought occurred to me that if I could do that, I wouldn't have to wait hours for my bass player to show up. And I talked to him a little bit afterwards. And then I went out and I found a book on fingerstyle blues. And started trying to figure this stuff out. And in the interim, I got a job hosting the open mic and doing lights and sound at that very club, the Speakeasy. And after the sound checks, I would practice guitar before the show, before the crowd showed up. And Rod McDonald, a guy who regularly played there, walked through and heard me playing, and he said, "Oh, you're trying to play some Mississippi John Hurt stuff there." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, if you want to study that stuff, I know this guy who knew John Hurt, and he teaches." And so he gave me the number, and it was Dave Van Ronk's number, and I began studying with him. And
now
it was.
Let
it
me
was
jump.
One of the pivotal moments of my life, really, you know.
Yeah. Now, let me jump in. Dave Van Ronk might not be familiar to all of my audience. He was the basis of the character in Inside Llewyn Davis.
That's right.
And was also one of the pivotal people in the village at the time when people like Bob Dylan were coming along. Talk to me a little bit about his history and how you guys sort of mesh.
Sure. Dave was already established as a folk musician here in Greenwich Village in the late 50s. And Bob Dylan came to New York, and one of the people he met up with right away was Dave. And they became friends. I think he crashed on Dave's couch for a while he was just getting settled in. And so as a result, I think one of the reasons Dave and I got along so well was that I had no idea who Dave was when I started studying with him. I just wanted to learn how to play the type of music he was playing. And so I wasn't loaded with questions about Bob Dylan. And I think that was maybe refreshing for him, because lots of times people would come there and solely because they wanted to, you know, find out the inside scoop on what Bob was like and things like that.
They wanted to be 2 degrees of separation away from Bob.
I guess so, yeah. And it wasn't until several months into studying with him that I was in a bar and I met some studio musicians. And when I told them, I mentioned that I was studying guitar, and they said, with who? And I said, Dave Van Ronk. And they said, the Dave Van Ronk? And, you know, I said, I imagine he must be the Dave. I couldn't imagine there being more than one. And that's when I found out what a figure he was in the folk scene. And you know, It was really exciting to realize that I had been unwittingly seated across the coffee table from a living legend, you know.
And studying all the good moves. Now, you consider yourself a blues guitarist primarily, right? What differentiates that from being any other kind of musician?
A blues musician?
Well, how would you define yourself on the scale?
Well, I mean, I would say I'm primarily a singer-songwriter who just happens to be influenced a lot by that particular style. I mean, the blues is an amazing thing, but it's not the only type of music I play. And but it's just that the whole concept that Dave really instilled in me was that the guitar is an instrument that you can separate the voices on. And just like the piano, you can have a bass and a treble thing happening. And whereas you see most people tend to either strum the guitar or flat pick the guitar, and you know, and there's this wonderful thing out there where you can kind of do both at the same time. And, I mean, and you know, there are a lot of people who do fingerstyle, but I had not been exposed to that, you know. And so it really opened up my playing immensely.
Okay, well, let's... In our discussion, while we were talking, I actually found a track of yours from a movie called Festus.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you'd like us to play that. Could you give us a little bit of background? It's part of a film, right?
Right. There was a film that about an open mic, and so they invited a bunch of musicians down to perform, and they filmed it all, and then they edited it down and made a movie about it. It's really it's quite a good little film. The song that I played is called Downtown, and it's about the way Greenwich Village has changed in the years that I've lived here, which is almost 30 years, and it certainly has. It's a very different neighborhood than it was, but I kind of think that's the nature of New York City in general, but that's the whole idea of the song, really.
So let's give it a listen. Hold on just a minute. I'm making sure I'm starting in just the right place.
Very good.
For a while now, I've been thinking about doing a walking tour of, wanted to like create a walking tour of my neighborhood. I live in Greenwich Village and have for a while. And I realized that all my favorite places are gone. That's what the song is about. It's called Downtown. Yeah. Now the bar stools are all vacant, and the waitress calls my name. So I bust the night's last table at Cowgirl Hall of Fame. And I still can't smell the catfish and the smoking day old beer in my hair and all my clothing when I get out of here. Downtown is history. I wonder, was it ever what it used to be? You know, they've closed the Derby Steakhouse and the Village Gate is gone. Now it's just another drugstore that don't sell the kind I'm on. The kettle is still serving. You can drop off a glass, but you better root for Green Bay, or the crowd might kick your ass. Downtown is history. I wonder, was it ever what it used to be? Talk to someone who don't know what Starbucks means. And lately I've been brooding on this very strong desire to sit in front of Kmart and set myself on fire. Downtown is here.
Welcome back. We're speaking to Chris Lowe, the author of that little ditty called Downtown, talking about the changes to the village. What do you think of that, listening to that? That was recorded 3 or 4 years ago, right?
I think it was about 2.5. Yeah.
Okay. And you have, if you've been in the village that long, wow, has everything changed?
Yeah, it certainly has. It was certainly much more of an artist community back in the 70s and before, of course, way back, like I said in the song, to the teens. I have to admit, it is the nature of New York City to constantly be changing.
Right, you're not engaging in some kind of false nostalgia here, and the fact that the line is, I wonder if it ever was what it used to be.
Right.
It kind of gives away the lie on that. But now you've done songs about the village practically since I've known you, since the 90s. You had an album come out many years ago where you talked about The Muse of Jones Alley was one of the titles, and Goodnight Willie Johnson. You talked about the changes to the way the city was being lived in by the people here.
Sure. And the Muse of Jones Alley is more or less my tribute to the things that are still the same, I guess. Whereas you know, downtown is kind of like the things that aren't the same. But I tend to write about places a lot, and you know, since I spent so much of the last several decades here, this is what I wrote about, you know. And one of the things Dave Van Ronk said about my material is that he said I write love songs about the village the way some people write love songs about a person, you know. And I really do love living in New York City. It's a goal and a dream in itself, you know.
Now, you didn't start out doing this, though. I know that you had a career early on as a child actor. Is that something you want to talk about? Or?
No, it's fine. I worked for 10 years on a soap opera called Search for Tomorrow, and I literally grew up on that show. And I guess in a way that's where my love affair with New York started. I mean, for 10 years I was working several times a week up at the Broadcast Center for CBS on 57th Street, and you know, it's really hard to start out that young and do that and not get the bug for being a performer and for loving life in New York City. That's for sure.
Right. One of the things that's always been fascinating to me about listening to your work is how heartfelt it is in terms of, you know, the things that you write about the city are not of somebody who's a dewy-eyed believer, if you will. You always have this sort of, you know, been through it but survived for the better of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do you have ambivalence about the city, or is that just a part of being here for so long that you kind of figured out ways to, you know, protect yourself emotionally, if you will?
I don't know. I never really thought about that before. But I think when you've lived someplace for as long as I have, I mean, it's difficult to. I feel like it's so colored. My experience is so colored by the fact that I've always been here, that it's hard to imagine what it's like to come here from somewhere else. I mean, this is just the way I've always felt like it was. And I guess knowing that things change and you know, I mean, you know, like I was saying, I've lived here in the village for almost 30 years, but you know, before that I was working as a child actor here. So even though I wasn't, you know, sleeping in Manhattan, I was certainly working a lot here. And, like, I guess it's kind of, I'm not saying I take it for granted by any stretch of the imagination, but it's kind of all I know.
Right.
Yeah. And so I you know, the dewy-eyed newcomer is something, like, I mean, I'm always fascinated by people who come here from somewhere else. I really enjoy that type of person, like the person who E.B. White would describe as willing to be lucky. One of the things he said about if you come to New York, you have to be willing to be lucky. And he also, his essay, Here Is New York, is one of my favorite things. And he said that there's three different types of people who live in the city or make up the city. And they are the people who've always been here, who give it the groundedness of the born and raised New Yorker. And then there's the people who commute from the suburbs. And he said they give the city its tidal effect, like they wash in and then they wash out every day. And then there's the people who come to New York in quest of something. And I have to admit, they bring a lot of magic to this town.
Now,
so,
lest I give people the wrong impression about your work, you have a real fun side. This is one of your old songs. Let me see if it works. Empty bottles and full ashtrays.
Yeah.
All I've got are empty bottles and full ashtrays. Man, it looks like the party's over. Same old way to end a thousand nights and to start a thousand days. Man, I wish I could start them over. I've had my fun. If I don't get well no more, I wanna see the sun shining right through my front door. And in the morning, when I go to sleep, all them garbage men, they're out in force. And all those promises I know I won't keep, I still make them anyway, of course. I say, I've had my fun. If I don't get well no more, I wanna see the sun shining right through my front door. I've had my fun. If I don't get, I wanna see the sun. Maybe 2 days out of the week, but all I've got are empty bottles and full ashtrays. And I know it must sound funny, but I'd kinda like to change my life and to change my ways. Save a little bit of money, hey, that'd be different. I've had my fun. If I don't get well no more, I wanna see the sun shining right through my front door. Shining through my front door.
I guess that's a blast from the past for you. You did that quite a while ago. I just always enjoyed the way the song was kind of happy-go-lucky, and I thought people should hear a different side of you, because in listening to some of your work, there are so many songs, and I didn't want to concentrate on the ones that are morose, certainly.
Right. I'm glad.
Okay, so now that was part of an album release you did, gosh, almost 20 years ago.
Right, that was in the late 90s, yeah.
And I'm curious if my listeners wanted to get in touch with you or wanted to know more about your work, how would they find out about you? You have a YouTube channel, I know.
Right, they can leave me a message there in the comment section, or they can check out my Facebook fan page, Chris Lowe, and leave me a message there if they're interested, and I'll keep them posted about gigs and various other events.
And what else? You had one other song that we wanted to talk about today, and this is fairly new. So you've been going at this for all these years. Talk to me about the new one.
Well, it's... this is one of those songs that I had really had no intention of writing. Somebody had said, they had talked about writing a song about somebody they hadn't seen in a long time. And I was kicking that idea as just like a template in my head. And then, you know, it just kind of, sometimes the stuff just writes itself. And I think I wrote most of this song while I was in the shower, to be perfectly honest with you. It's strictly a flight of fancy, and it, in a sense, the song itself is a joke, and there's a punchline at the end there. But that's probably all I need to say.
No, that's okay. You can. I mean, it's your work. If you have something that I'm missing here, we'll go into it. But let's.
You are talking about you've changed, right?
Yes, I hope so.
Okay, good.
Because it's the only thing I have queued up right now.
Okay. Very
okay.
Good.
So let's give it a listen.
You walked up to me and you told me your name. I stared at your face. Cause it wasn't the same. Your eyes were all curly, your hair was bright blue, and I couldn't imagine what happened to you. You've changed, but that's for certain. You've changed. I don't know what you've been doing since we've been estranged, but one thing's for certain. You sure have changed. You stuck out your hand and smiled in my face. I noticed your teeth were all over the place. You said it's been ages. I said that's true, but I couldn't imagine what happened to you. You've changed. That's for certain. Our beers, you had bird claws and fish hooks and bolts in your ears, from your neck to your ankles, just one big tattoo, and I couldn't imagine what happened to you. You changed, that's for certain. You changed. I don't know what you've been doing since we've been estranged, but one thing's for certain. Sure have changed. You had rings on your fingers and bells on your toes. You had spikes on your collar and a bone through your nose. Your pungent perfume, an insecticide bomb. I could not believe you used to be my mom. You changed. That's for certain. You changed. Now you don't just look scary, you look completely deranged. And one thing's for certain, you sure have changed. Please put the chainsaw down, Mom.
That is great.
Oh, thanks.
Well, I'm also... In my copious free time doing arts of facilitation out in Brooklyn, and I've been trying to explain this whole Muddy Waters thing of Mannish Boy, and I've spent the last 2 weeks explaining, yes, that was a riff that this guy wrote, and yes, everybody has used it, and yes, that's okay. But wow, that's a lot of fun.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you enjoyed that. I'm actually really grateful that you've invited me to talk with you tonight.
Well, it's been a while. We've been trying to set this up for a while. My show is coming to an end here. We will continue somewhere else. But I wanted to have you on at least once so that my BCR audience could hear you. So I hope that's okay. And let's see. I've got a couple of your songs to play us out. Let's see what I've got here. And see, we have Parsonage Creek, we have Goodnight Willie Johnson, or the Muse of Jones Alley. Pick one and tell us why.
Okay. We talked about Muse of Jones Alley and the other one, Goodnight Willie Johnson. Those are both Greenwich Village songs. But let's go with Parsonage Creek. And that's a song I wrote about the area I grew up on in out on Long Island when I was a kid. And, you know, we lived on this canal. And it was very interesting because coming into the city to work as an actor during the day, I felt like James Bond. And then when I'd come home, down at the canal and fishing and stuff, I felt like Huckleberry Finn. So it was a wonderful combination of... So there I was in the bayous of southern Long Island. But yeah, Parsonage Creek is a song about that aspect of my life. And yeah, I would love it if you played that.
Okay, well, listen, thank you once again for joining us. We'll have this up on podcast. For my regular listeners, you can hear everything that I do here on my website, thebrooklynculturejammers.com. And you can also check out my Facebook page, Brooklyn Culture Jam. And I just can't say enough to tell you how much I appreciate you being on. Chris, thanks.
Oh, my goodness. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Okay, so with that, we're going to go with the Muse of Jones Alley. I'm sorry, Parsonage Creek.
Parsonage Creek.
Side and Baldwin seem so far away. Down below 14th Street, where I tend to stay. I try to keep my memory selectively incomplete, but I keep dreaming dreams about that. Parsonage Creek. Oceanside and Baldwin are seldom on my mind. Like an outgrown pair of shoes, I left those two behind. Yet still I find it happens maybe three or four times a week that I wake up from dreaming about that house on Parsonage Creek. 3 the Jones Beach Inlet, the ocean waterways flow past Reynolds Channel, marshy middle bays, and I can say with confidence I could find it in my sleep, 'cause I keep dreaming dreams about that house on Parsonage Creek. The weeping at waterside, and boats returning at eventide. Who's that calling? Mom, and she's saying it's dinner time, and I'm stalling. Tuna fish casserole, dinner time. And last night, Magna Mater pointed at the sky. Underneath mimosa blossoms, it must have been July. She said to me, The moon is gonna be full by midweek. Then you and I catch those blue claw crabs on Parsonage Creek. My sister, Mother Nature, she lives in Cobble Hill. She's got a box of flowers growing outside a windowsill. And she says being haunted isn't really very unique. Every night I dream about that house on Parsonage.